The unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. Now we come to the practice of bodhisattvas, which forms the last part of the Lotus Sutra. Manjushri has already asked the Buddha how bodhisattvas should teach the Lotus Sutra. And the Buddha has replied in the chapter on the conduct that eases the way, which we sometimes recite. We talked about it briefly the other day. I won't go into it at great length here because it's fairly long, and I think it's mostly aimed at monks. However, we can all apply its teachings. In brief, one should practice patience and gratitude and keep a calm and even mind, not getting upset by things, not wanting, not getting irritated, or if you get irritated, not to hold on to it, just to let it come and go. To keep a calm and even mind as best we can. Patience with all the things that come our way. Gratitude for all that we have. One should be careful not to associate with people who would be detrimental to one's practice. Not by looking down on them, just this is not helpful. The other day we talked about the Rinpoche who would bring his students into the bar, not to drink, but just to be with the people, not looking down on them, and being careful, he'd be with them. If we have a weakness in some area, we need to be careful, maybe stay away from that bar if we shouldn't be there. Just to be aware of our own weaknesses and our own tendencies, and just to take care, but not looking down on people, just safeguarding our practice. One should view all things as impermanent and not the true reality, but see things clearly as they are. This helps us to practice equanimity, not taking things too hard, holding them more lightly because they are not the true reality. When we come back to this, it helps us not to get too upset about things, not to get too fearful, not to get too worried about the future or clinging on to the past, just to helps us to keep that calm and even mind. One should practice right speech, not speaking disrespectfully of others or pointing out their shortcomings. One should purify one's mind of all envy and ill will and pride. Then one will be able to teach the Dharma in a true and skillful way, and thus help beings. There's not a self in it. Not having me teaching the Dharma, me teaching these people how to live their lives, me having something they don't have. It's not that at all. We're just doing our best without envy, ill will, or pride, greed, hate, and delusion, another way of putting it. And it's well worth reading this chapter for itself, because there's a lot more than that in it. Now in the Lotus Sutra, we've seen the millions of bodhisattvas springing up out of the earth, all over the world, ready to protect the Lotus Sutra and preach it for all beings. And you've heard the Buddha explain that he is not just this physical body that they see, but that he has an immeasurable lifespan, and that he will still be here for ages yet to come. And we've also seen that it is people doing their training and helping other beings that allows the Buddha to remain in the world. It's up to us to practice the way of the Bodhisattva, which is the way to Buddhahood, to help beings. As Great Master Dogen says over and over again, and as I have been saying too, training and enlightenment are one, the same thing. We don't train in order to get enlightenment. We practice our innate enlightenment by doing the training. We practice the Bodhisattva way. helping ourselves and helping other beings. Now we have a number of examples of how a bodhisattva trains and helps beings. These are the greater bodhisattvas, bodhisattvas with a big B. We're the bodhisattvas with a little B. But we can learn from them, follow their example. The first one is bodhisattva never disparage. There's many people who just love this bodhisattva. Master Ryokan, a somewhat eccentric Japanese scholar monk who was a hermit. He loved bodhisattva never disparage. He'd write poems about him. Because he was such a modest, humble person, very simple practice. And this bodhisattva is a previous life of Shakyamuni Buddha, in which he was a monk who would go about bowing to everybody and saying, I respect you, I would never disparage you, because you are practicing the way and you will become a Buddha. Well, some people would get annoyed and think he was being presumptuous. Who are you to tell me I'm not going to be a Buddha, or I'm going to be a Buddha, or whatever? But he would continue to do this practice without giving up, because he felt it was really important to respect everybody and encourage them in this way. When he was coming to the end of his life, he obtained supernatural powers and his lifespan was greatly extended. And the people who had cursed him and looked down on him, they saw this. And then they had faith in him. Oh, you were wrong about this person. And as a result of this monk's practice, many people were deeply converted to the Dharma. And they had faith they hadn't had before. And in fact, the Buddha says, that all here on Vulture Peak, with him and with all the others right now, because the Buddha was this previous monk, never disparage, and here they are all, preaching, hearing him preach the Lotus Sutra. So this monk's simple practice of respecting everybody and seeing their potential to become a Buddha had a great effect both on him and on them. So never look down on anyone or judge their training, not to look for their shortcomings, but to see the best in them, to see their Buddha nature, and to treat everyone with respect, and to think of everybody with respect, in mind as well as in speech, to think of people with respect. It's a very helpful practice for us. Look with the mind of a Buddha and you will see the heart of a Buddha, as Reverend Master Jiu used to say. And this helps us to open our heart to other beings, to see that we are not separate from them, we're not different. We may not associate with everybody, but we're not separate either. We're not different, we still respect them. For those who teach, whether you're teaching the Dharma or teaching in a school, to see the potential in people, to encourage them. And when we look back to our own young days, the teachers we remember with gratitude are the ones who encouraged us, who could see some potential in us. In the scripture on the conduct that leads us the way that I was just talking about, the Buddha tells the monks not to discourage people by criticizing them and saying they'll never become Buddhas, but to help them and encourage them. And this is what the Bodhisattva Never Disparage does. He encourages people. He bows to them, he respects everybody. Now we have the chapter on the marvelous spiritual powers of the Tathagata, which is another one that we recite. And this is the chapter that Dogen would recite when he was dying, as I mentioned. In this chapter, the Bodhisattvas and Mahasattvas, great beings who have sprung up out of the earth, undertake to preach the Lotus Sutra wherever they can, because they too want to accept it and understand it themselves. When you teach something, it helps you to understand it. They want to do this. They've sprung up out of the earth. They haven't crawled out, they've sprung up. So this is our joy in practice, our willingness to train, springing up to do it. In this chapter, the Buddha exhibits his spiritual powers in ways that may seem strange to us living in a different time and a different culture. he stretches forth his tongue until it reaches up to Brahma's heaven. This means that he's preaching the Dharma far and wide. He emits countless rays of light, lighting up all the worlds in all directions. The light of the Dharma, the light of wisdom, so that people can see clearly that they can have wisdom. And all the other Buddhas present, all these emanations of Shakyamuni Buddha who have come to hear him preach the Lotus Sutra, they all do the same. They are all of one mind. Their teaching is all one. And eventually they draw in their tongues and clear their throats simultaneously, signifying the speaking of the Dharma without obstruction. There's nothing in the way. Clearing their throats, clearing the passage, allowing the Dharma to flow forth freely. And they snap their fingers to signify their agreement. Everybody in all these worlds where these other Buddhas come from, they're all able to see all these many Buddhas emitting light and hearing them clear their throats, snap their fingers and so on. They can all see this. And this means that everybody, all these people, will become a Buddha. They can see the Buddhas. They will become Buddha. And the devas tell them this. And the devas also tell them that Shakyamuni Buddha is preaching the Lotus Sutra, which gives guidance to bodhisattvas and which the Buddhas guard well and keep in mind, and they should follow it joyfully. Once again, the emphasis on training with joy. The Buddha entrusts the preaching of the Lotus Sutra to the bodhisattvas and mahasattvas of our world who sprung up out of our own earth. And he tells everybody that to accept and uphold the Lotus Sutra will bring immeasurable benefits. He says, assuredly and without doubt, they will attain the Buddha way. And the bodhisattvas and mahasattvas all say, yes, we will teach the Lotus Sutra. We will uphold it and propagate it far and wide. Don't worry, we will do it. And they say this three times to emphasize its importance and their resolve. They will do it. Now during all this time, the stupa of many treasures Buddha, which emerged from the earth some chapters before, has been present, hovering above the earth, with many treasures Buddha and Shakyamuni sitting inside. And now it's clear that the bodhisattvas and mahasattvas have taken on this job of preaching the Lotus Sutra, carrying it forward into ages yet to come. So the stupa with many treasures Buddha departs. He's satisfied, all is well. Because it's clear that the Lotus Sutra will continue to be preached and put into practice. And all the many emanations of Shakyamuni Buddha also go back to their own realms. They're leaving it to us. They're leaving it to the bodhisattvas of this world to carry on the teaching. It's up to us in our world to put it into practice. Now we have a chapter that has caused controversy and concern down to the present day. It's the chapter in which the bodhisattva medicine king, not to be confused with the medicine Buddha, it's the medicine king. He burns his body as an offering to the Buddha in his land, as well as to the Lotus Sutra, saying that this is the highest offering that he can make. So he drinks fragrant oil and wraps himself in cloth and pours oil all over himself. Then he sets fire to himself and burns for 1,200 years. Long time. Then after that, he's reborn, and he makes another offering to a Buddha. And this time he burns his arms off. And the people who see this are worried because he's got no arms. Whereupon he says that he is certain that he'll obtain the golden body of a Buddha. And if this is so, may his arms be restored. And so they are. His arms are restored. He's whole again. And this is because of his deep practice and his merit. And the sutra says one effect of these burnings of the body is that they cause innumerable people to have faith in the Dharma and to wish for Buddhahood. Thus it's the highest of all the offerings, the epitome of generosity, giving up one's own body. And this has caused great concern and controversy, as I said. As we know, there have been many examples of monks and nuns burning themselves for political reasons and within our own living memory, for some of us, during the Vietnam War and the Chinese occupation of Tibet, to draw people's attention to these things. Well, to us in the West, doing things like this may seem horrific, but in Chinese culture, and even Indian culture, apparently it's not so unknown for people to burn themselves for religious reasons. It's happened throughout history. A number of monks and nuns have done so, and probably other people besides. Sometimes people have burned off some of their fingers as an offering. However, most Buddhists do not condone burning oneself, especially the burning of the whole body. It's killing. And they say that this chapter of the Lotus Sutra is not meant to be taken literally. It simply represents giving one's whole life to the Dharma, giving one's very essence, one's energy, one's life, one's time, everything. And we can do that. We can devote our whole life to our Buddhist practice. We don't have to kill or maim ourselves. Reverend Master Jiyu, as well as many other masters, have made this abundantly clear. The Lotus Sutra is full of stories and events that we can't take literally. And this is one of them. So don't get setting fire to yourself. Now we have another bodhisattva. The bodhisattva, wonderful sound, who manifests himself in all sorts of different forms to help different beings, again, using his skillful means. So if the form of a Buddha will help somebody, he appears as a Buddha. Or if a king will help somebody, he'll appear as a king, or a householder, or a monk, or a nun, a young boy, or a young girl, a dragon, human or non-human being, a woman to help women, and so on. He doesn't worry about keeping his own form. He takes whatever form will help somebody. Non-attachment to the self. I am this person, I am this being. No, being willing to do whatever is needed to help somebody, to be whatever one needs to be. And this is not an artificial thing, it's a response to somebody's need. We do this too, actually. Sometimes we're a teacher, sometimes we're a friend, sometimes a relative, sometimes we're the person in need. With our family, we may be a different person from the one we are at work. As long as we're acting with integrity and keeping to the precepts, not pretending to be what we are not, or manipulating people, it's fine and normal. We may appear as an angry being to somebody, to a child running into the road, as somebody said the other day. What is helpful here? That's the thing. What is helpful? Skillful means. Not being attached, not being stuck with, I am this person, I am like this. What is needed here? Now comes the chapter on Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, a scripture we recite regularly, and the chapter we're most familiar with. The devotion to Avalokiteshvara, calling on her name in faith. Faith and devotion, as we've said, help us to open the heart to that which is greater than we are. Whether we think of it in the form of Avalokiteshvara as a being, or as a Buddha, or the Dharmakaya, or Buddha nature, or finding compassion within ourselves, whatever helps us, calling forth compassion in the midst of the difficulties of our lives. Avalokiteshvara, the hearer of the cries of the world. That's what her name means. The one who hears, the one who listens to the cries of the world. And she responds. All the different situations in the scripture of Avalokiteshvara can be related to our own lives. And as I said recently, Reverend Master Koten gave a lovely talk which he made into an article, which is on his website, Lionsgate Buddhist Priority website, about the Kansian scripture. And I'll read a couple of little things. I could read the whole thing with great benefit, actually. But I won't. Great compassion responds to all beings and situations without exception. It produces and comes forth from deep commitment to training ourselves. When people hear about great compassion and look for its manifestations in their lives and cherish it within their own hearts, then everything is transformed. If events should overwhelm you, pushing you towards suffering and pain, bring to mind, practice, and realize great compassion, and that situation will be transformed, and you'll be able to be still no matter what happens. If you're drifting without purpose and life seems about to drown you, bring to mind and call upon great compassion, and you will see compassion in this situation and be able to stay afloat, not drown. If surrounded by threatening events and people who wish you harm, call upon great compassion, and the minds of those people will change for the better. To practice great compassion towards them, bring it to mind. When you're persecuted by events and there's no way out, remember great compassion, and a way through will appear. When anger or desire threaten to overwhelm you, remember and take refuge in compassion, and you'll be able to be still in the midst of it. If struck by unfairness and disaster or pain you cannot bear, remember, take refuge in and practice compassion, and you will be able to go on. When the news of the world grieves and oppresses us, think on the power of great compassion, and remember that nothing can resist the power of compassion. And it goes on. It's just really helpful. So I just thought I would read a few of those. There's much more than that. But it gives you a sense of it. This is how you practice compassion. It's not some magical thing. It's just turning the heart towards compassion in the midst of difficulty. And with that, there are many stories of people calling on Avalokiteshvara as a being and receiving a very definite response, receiving help. There's a lovely book by John Blofeld called Bodhisattva of Compassion, with some stories about how extraordinary things happen when people ask for help. I'll tell you my favorite one because I really like it. There's a Chinese family, and the husband and wife are getting a little older, and the wife, out of kindness, gets two concubines for her husband. This is normal in those days, to get two concubines, so that he can enjoy sexual pleasure that she really doesn't want to give anymore. And one of the concubines starts to take over the house, takes over everything, is unkind to the mother, who eventually dies grief-stricken. And the concubine's just awful. She's just awful. She's mean, she divides people, she's unkind. And the son of the house sees all this and hates her. Then she starts trying to divide him from his own wife, and he hates her even more. And finally, they're in a situation where he has the opportunity to kill her. They're out in the wild somewhere, and there's some brigands around, and he knows that if he were to kill her, because they are two just out of sight of the people they're with, the people would think the brigands had done it. He picks up a stone and is just about to hit her with it, and she sees his intention, and without batting an eye, she calls on Avalokiteshvara, "O great merciful one, compassionate one, save me." And he cannot move. He's completely paralyzed as though he's made of iron. He cannot do anything. And she just laughs and walks away. And then he can move again. But the moment has passed. And that evening he thanks Kanzion, Avalokiteshvara, for saving him from killing somebody, from committing a murder. Thank you for saving me from doing that. And furthermore, the concubine becomes kind. She changes. She becomes a good person, helps beings. And the person who relates this story says, "I can't explain this. I don't know how that happened, but happen it did." So you just don't know. But I like that story. Back to the Lotus Sutra. We come to the story of the king, wonderful adornment. Now, he's not a Buddhist at first, but his two sons are. And they eventually convert him to Buddhism. The sons become monks, and then the king and his queen and all the retinue become monks and nuns also. It's not a very dramatic story, but it gives us a lesson. Our training has a beneficial effect on our relatives and others around us. And those who have been training for a long time know this well. They may not be saying anything about Buddhism, people may not even know they're Buddhist. But anybody who is trying to live a life of compassion and wisdom, of unselfishness, inevitably has a profound effect on other people. And this is how we continue the life of Buddha, how we practice the way of the Bodhisattva, just by putting the teaching into practice in our lives in our modest way. We don't have to save the world, we just have to do our training. And this helps everybody. So the last being to appear in the Lotus Sutra is the great Bodhisattva Samantabhadra, who has come to hear the Buddha preach the Lotus Sutra. He's often associated with the Lotus Sutra. And he asks the Buddha, how will people be able to acquire the Lotus Sutra? How will they be able to find it and hear it and practice it after the Buddha's parinirvana, after he's died? And the Buddha says they have to fulfill four conditions. First, they must be protected and kept in mind by the Buddhas. And this means we must have courage and faith to know that we are protected by the Buddhas. The Dharma protects the Dharma practicer, as they've always said. The Dharma protects the Dharma practicer. To have faith in this and live our lives with courage. Not to worry too much about the future, what might happen to us, but to trust that fundamentally all will be well. Second condition, they must plant the roots of virtue. To do our best to train ourselves and keep to the precepts, to convert our greed, anger, and delusion into compassion, love, and wisdom. Third, they must enter the stage where they are sure of reaching enlightenment, i.e. we must have confidence in our training and keep going. We must not slide backwards, we must never give up. Keep going, keep training. Never worry about what we might think of ourselves or anything, just to keep on going, never to be discouraged, just to keep on going. And this is also translated, this third condition is also comes out as, they must join those who are intent on awakening, i.e. we must train with other people, train with the Sangha as best we can, when we can. Some of us live alone, far away from others, but when we can be with others, we know it's really helpful. We all know how helpful it is to train with other people. That's why we're all here together now. We sit together, we work together, we talk about the Dharma together, we help each other. And when we can't be with other people, to keep in touch in some other way, to listen to Dharma talks, to talk to others, to call up the Abbey or email us if you need help with something or whatever. Fourth condition, they must conceive a determination to save all living beings. The Bodhisattva vow, the practice of a Bodhisattva. However innumerable beings may be, I vow to save them all. Not to save them all by myself, but to do my best as comes my way to help beings, to practice the Dharma, to live the life of Buddha, and thereby to help to continue the life of Buddha. And the Buddha says, if good men and good women fulfill these four conditions, then after the thus come one, the Buddha, has ended extinction, they will be certain to acquire the sutra. They'll be able to hear it and accept it and put it into practice. Then Samantabhadra undertakes to protect anyone who upholds the Lotus Sutra, especially in the Dharma ending age. As I said, there's always the Dharma ending age. He says, I will mount my six-tusked kingly white elephant, and with my multitude of great bodhisattvas, I will proceed to where he or she is. I will manifest myself, offer alms, guard and protect them, and bring comfort to their mind. And when the person sees him, they will be filled with great joy, and they'll apply themselves with greater diligence than ever. Samantabhadra will guard and protect the sutra, and see that it never comes to an end. The Buddha is very happy about this. He says, the people who accept and uphold the Lotus Sutra have seen himself, have seen Shakyamuni Buddha. Those who do it, they've offered alms to Shakyamuni, been praised by Shakyamuni, and have been covered in the robes of Shakyamuni Buddha. To be read, uphold, and practice the Lotus Sutra means of practicing a life of Buddha. Then everybody present is filled with great joy, and accepting and upholding the words of the Buddha, they bowed in obeisance and departed. So, after all this, what is the Lotus Sutra? It's a teaching of skillful means. The explanation for the seemingly different and sometimes conflicting teachings, uniting them all into one great vehicle, the Mahayana, the way to Buddhahood. It's a teaching that all beings have Buddha nature, all can and will become Buddha. It's the teaching of the immeasurable life of the Tathagata, immeasurable life of the Buddha, that Buddha nature is in all things and in all beings, in all worlds and in all times. And it is the entrustment to us to practice the way of the Bodhisattva to help all beings as well as ourselves. By doing our daily training, we're helping all beings. We're putting the Lotus Sutra into practice. Training and enlightenment are one. These themes are fundamental to our tradition and to the teaching of Great Master Dogen and others in our lineage, down to Reverend Master Jiyu, and now down to us in this present day. So may we accept them, uphold them, and joyfully put them into practice. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.